So if you haven't already, go ahead and turn to Colossians chapter 3. Colossians chapter 3. And I know we have kids this morning in the service. And so if we're not going to have a special time for the kids during the service, but we want you to worship along together with your family this morning. We do have some papers in the back, and you can grab those. I think we've got some word scrambles and stuff and things that will help the kids to focus in. But I do want to say to you kids, since we have you in here this morning, Royce, you can turn the music off. I don't need all the ambiance. Everything is going to be very powerful this morning because I got the music in the background, all right? Kids, okay, I know you're in here, and sometimes when somebody like me, an adult, gets up here and drones on for a long time, right, it can be hard to pay attention, right? So I want to encourage you, okay, about two things. Halfway through, okay, and maybe some of you adults are going to be looking for this as well, but about halfway through, I'm going to share a very gross story, okay? And so I want you to pay attention and be looking for that gross story, because, you know, I know everybody loves a good gross story. And then also, I want you on your paper that you have, okay, I want you to write down one thing that you want to do to fight sin. Now, you may be like, I have no idea what to do to fight sin yet, but we're actually going to talk about it a little bit this morning. And I'm going to give multiple things, more than one thing that you can write down, but I just want you to write one down. And if you write it down and bring it to me after the service, I'll have a little treat for you. Does that sound good? All right, I have a little treat for you, but you have to have it written down one way you want to fight sin. Now, if you adults, you know, maybe I'll treat you as well if you want to do that also. Now, when I was in middle school, my parents purchased a 5-acre property, an old farmhouse and barn from the 1900s. I mean, early 1900s. I know there was like a little sidewalk that was put down, and it had etched in it 1895. Okay, so it was really old, and we had to do that because my grandfather was a horse trader, and after he retired, he had one horse that he owned that was his, that he didn't trade away, and he didn't want to get rid of it, and so he gifted it to our family, specifically my brother. Okay, and we lived, my dad was a pastor, so we lived in a parsonage right next to the church, and we did not have a place for a horse. And so behind the church, there was this old farmhouse, 5 acres, and my parents, I mean, it was rough. If you went inside, everything was falling apart, but it had good bones. And so my parents were able to get it for really cheap. And then my dad spent 2 years renovating it, okay? And I got to be a part of that renovation. And I was in seventh grade, I think, when we started that, and we walked through, and the first thing we did was we started to tear down the walls, because the idea was we're going to probably have to take it down to its studs and fully renovate this thing. And as I got to help with that, you know, got the sledgehammers and everything out, and this was a blast for a middle school teenager. And as we started ripping out the walls, and you had the studs, and then you had these little tiny slatted wood, right, that would cross over. And we would rip those out, and as we were ripping those out, we would find paper, like newspaper from the 1900s, that they had shoved in there for insulation, right? But the other thing that we found in there, and it was just piles of it, we found up to my chest, okay? It was probably higher than that because I was in eighth grade at that point, seventh, eighth grade. We found bat dung. I mean, just filling the walls. Right, yeah. Apparently, that's exactly what my mom said. A little bit more extreme than that. But it was filling all the walls. We were ripping it out, and it was just filling. There was apparently a colony. I don't know if you call it colony, but there was a colony of brown bats that lived in the attic of this farmhouse. And really, nobody had been living there for years and years and years. And what they said is the smallest amount of these brown bats would be 300. That's the smallest when you have a colony, right? So we actually had a bat guy come in, and he had a vacuum cleaner and started getting rid of all the bats and everything. But, I mean, it's a whole fun story, okay? Well, I'll tell you more about it later. But anyways, we had, it was just dumpster after dumpster of those first few weeks of trash and all of the old insulation and bat poop. It was just disgusting. Now, we could have just left it and put up drywall, right? We could have done that. Put up some new drywall, right? Fresh paint, and it would look great, wouldn't it? It would. It'd be great. But what are you thinking? Once you know there's bat poop in the walls, you're always going to know there's bat poop in the walls, and that's going to have an effect on you, isn't it? I mean, it was rotten. It was nasty. And so anything new you put up, you know what it's going to do, right? It's going to ruin all the new stuff, and it's going to start to come through. You might even get some health effects because you're breathing all of that in every single day, and you're not going to be able to live there for very long, right? It just gets real nasty real quick. And so all the work that you did, eventually, you're going to have to move out, and you're going to eventually have to do it all over again, right? That's what happens when you don't do it properly. So when renovating something old and building something new on it, you have to work really hard to clean it out, right? You have to work really hard to scour the whole area, take away all of the rotten stuff, right? Maybe you have rotten floorboards, right? Water damage and everything. If you just put carpet on top of it, what's going to happen? Eventually, you're going to have issues. It may collapse at some point. You have to clean out the old in order to put in the new. And I think it's the same way in our own spiritual life. The Bible tells us that we are dirty, rotten, filled with sin. We have an old sinful nature. Ephesians 2 tells us that we are dead in our trespasses and sins. We follow Satan and our own evil desires, and all we can really do is pursue ourselves and pursue sin. We don't seek after God, as Romans tells us. We've got a lot of problems, but Jesus Christ has come in, right? And we've been going through the book of Colossians, and we found out that Jesus, creator of the universe, sacrificed himself on the cross so that he could cut away and remove all of that dirty, rotten sin, right? He comes in and Colossians specifically says he circumcised that old nature out of us. He removes the dirty and rotten fuel that is making us want to live in this sinful way, and he gives us a new life. He gives us really his perfect life, his righteousness, so that we can start to, from that point, build a new life here on earth for him. But Paul, here, as we come along, he's reminding us of this point. He says, actually, in Colossians 3 and verse 1, you have been raised with Jesus Christ, right? You have been raised. And then he says, seek the things that are above. And what we're going to find is your life is, Pastor James went over all of this last week, your life in Jesus Christ, if you've put your faith and trust in him, your life is hidden with Christ. You are a new creature. Ephesians 2 says you've been made into a new masterpiece, right? But Paul then comes along here in Colossians, and he makes a couple statements. He says you have to start seeking now a new life. You have to start seeking the things of God. Then he says in verse 5, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you. Right? So in this process, we've been circumcised. Our old nature has been cut out, but we still have the remnants, right? We still have sin in our life. We have been set free to be able to live for Jesus Christ, but we still have some old stuff that we need to clean out. Kind of like, right? In the walls, we've got some bat dung, right? That we've got to clean out. We've got to get the dumpsters and start unloading it, right? Because if we don't do that, what will happen? We already talked about it, right? If we've got a sinful habit, we put our faith and trust in Jesus Christ. He sets us free from that sinful habit, but I still have a choice. I've got to start cleaning house a little bit, right? Maybe I shouldn't hang out with those people that are influencing me the way that I shouldn't go. Maybe I've got to stay away from that thing that's always tempting me. I can't go back to that habit anymore because I'm new. I'm a new person, right? We can't leave it there, put up some new drywall and fresh paint, because what will it do? We start to build this new life on rotten floorboards, right, that we never fixed and we never took care of. Eventually, whatever we're building is going to fail and it's going to collapse. And so Paul comes along in Colossians 3, verse 5, and he says, now that you're new, now that Jesus has changed you, you were once against God, now you're a new creature in him, you're a child of God, I want you to put to death, I want you to clean house and start building something new. And so we see, if you look at verse 5, it says, put to death, therefore, what is earthly in you. Put to death what is earthly in you. Sexual immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, covetousness, which is idolatry. And he starts making this list, right? Things that we need to root out from our life, things that we need to clean out, go to the studs, pull it all out. Well, what is he talking about here? Sexual immorality here is a broad general term for all kinds of illicit sexual behavior. See, God created sex for a man and a woman inside of marriage. And so what he's saying here, anything outside of that is wrong. Anything outside of that is sin. So you need to put it away. You need to understand God's design for that in the believer's life. Then he says impurity. This is uncleanness. This is the dirty, the things that actually don't match up to Christ and his purity and his holiness. Remember, Jesus Christ has given us his righteousness. And so we don't want to live a life that doesn't fit with that righteousness. He's saying the things that are incompatible with God's holiness, those are the things that we need to put away. Then he says passion. And this is really lustful passion. It's actually the same word that is used in Romans chapter 1, where in Romans we see people that are just living headlong for themselves, and they are turning away from God. And what God does is he actually gives them over to their evil, lustful passions. He says, okay, if that's what you want, go ahead. And then immediately after that, we see perversion. They give themselves over to perversion, and we see scriptures about homosexuality and all sorts of different kinds of sexual evils that they give themselves over to. That's the same thing that Paul is referencing here in Colossians. Then we see evil desire. The desire, the lust, the craving. It's the same thing that we see in Ephesians chapter 2, where we are dead in our sins, and then it says that we are dead in our trespasses and sins, we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind. It's lust and craving for those things that really aren't ours and we cannot have, and it turns into evil desire. And then he says, covetousness, which is idolatry. And covetousness is this idea of greed, a desire to have more. A guy by the name of Max Anders, who was commenting on this passage, he says, greed is the assumption that all things and passions exist for my own benefit. Right? Everything that I see It's there for me. It's the internal sinful desire to satisfy and satiate ourselves with more and more and more. It's what our heart wants, and so we pursue it. And Paul equates it to idolatry, right? He says, covetousness, which is idolatry. Essentially, when we are wanting more and more and more, we are worshiping that thing, essentially worshiping ourselves over and above God. That's what idolatry is. We're worshiping something other than God, and it has become more important to us. And so what do? We see Paul here describing almost like the effects of sin in our life. If we worship something more than God, we start to think about it and want it more, and it turns into this evil passion and desire, so that we just, all we can think about is getting that thing, and so we are willing to do whatever it takes to get that thing over and above pursuing Jesus Christ. And it goes as far as turning into things like sexual immorality and perversion, and that's what sin does to us, right? That's how it destroys us. And Paul says, we gotta root that out. It's kind of stinking up your house, right? Jesus has saved you. It's the bad stuff. I understand that it's there. We all have it, right? But we all have to go in and we have to clean it out. We have to get rid of it. He says, we're building something new. That's where he comes in and he says, why should we do this? Why does it matter, right? Because it goes back to that illustration, right? Why can't I just put up the walls in fresh paint? Why can't I just look good to everybody and be the good Christian person sitting in the pew? Well, look what he says. He says it in verse 6. On account of these, the wrath of God is coming. This sin is punishable by the wrath of God. God is sending people to hell for this stuff. So that's one reason why you should get rid of it, okay? Then he goes on and he says, but now you must put them all away. Verse before 7. In these two you once walked when you were living in them. So the wrath of God is coming on this, but this is what you were a slave to. This is what you were dead in. And Paul's kind of like, hey guys, I want you to understand this. This is just logical. Jesus saved you from it. You were a slave to it. That's actually a horrible life. Why would we go back to it? That doesn't make sense, right? Jesus saved you from it. You were a slave to it. You're set free now. Live for Christ. Don't live for that stuff anymore. See, these are the very things that Jesus died for. The very things that he was put to death for and went through all of that torture for. He nailed these sins to the cross for you. He cut away that sinful nature that fueled these things out of your life so that you could be free and you didn't have to do them anymore. So Paul says, look at verse 8. Obviously, he says, you should put them all away. And then he makes another list. Let me say a few more things, right? Put away anger. What is anger? I think we all know kind of what, it's pretty general, what is anger. It's that internal kind of seething, that seething, smoldering emotion that boils below the surface, right? And then it comes out in that next one, right? That next word, rage. Where something happens. Somebody does something that we don't like. Remember, we're talking about, think about the idea of idolatry. I want something, right? And something comes along, doesn't go my way, I don't like what somebody did, they hurt me or whatever, and we've got this anger underneath, like, oh, right? We're not handling it properly. Then it comes out in rage. A quick, sudden outburst. A blaze of emotion that flares up because we're angry, right? The outburst at home. The yelling, the screaming, because of what somebody did. Then he says malice. This word for malice refers to ill will, vicious, deliberate intention of doing harm to others. This is a different list, isn't it? We've got this list of impurity and sexual immorality, all kind of connected, wanting more. And then we see he's talking more about like our reactions. He's talking more about how we deal with people and how we interact. He says, malice, the words that come out of our mouth, are they with malice? Are they vicious? Do they hurt others? Then he says, slander, defamation of character, to injure somebody's reputation. Then he says, obscene talk. And sometimes we think of obscene talk, when we hear the word obscene, we think like inappropriate kind of talk. But actually this word here is more specific to the idea of abusive talk. Okay? Intentionally trying to hurt and abuse others with our words. And then he says, don't lie one to another. Don't say what's false. See, these lists are different, right? You could put them next to each other and be like, oh, this one's talking about how we interact with people and relationships, and it's kind of fueled by anger, right? And oftentimes we may see that it's fueled by bitterness, right? Something that somebody does to me, I'm upset, I'm angry. Maybe I lash out at them, but the problem isn't taken care of. I didn't handle it properly, and so I start to hold a what? A grudge. The Bible tells us that bitterness takes root, and it starts to grow. And what comes out? This stuff, right? That's the one list, right? But then we over here, we have, you know, the sexual immorality, and we see like covetousness. What does it do? It kind of takes root and takes hold. I want something. And then as it grows, what does it come out in? It comes out in that list, doesn't it? Evil desire and passion grabbing for the things that I want. But it's interesting, both of these lists, impurity and anger, they're both fueled by idolatry. James chapter 4 tells us, why do we fight and quarrel with one another? Who can tell me what it says? What does it say? Because we what? Don't get what, my kids wouldn't know this, we don't get what we what? Want. That's what James says. We fight with one another and we quarrel with one another because we didn't get what we wanted. Where does all of this anger and all of this stuff, it's essentially, I want something, you didn't give it to me, and so I'm upset and I'm lashing out in anger. Maybe it grows so deep that I slander and I hurt you. All kind of focused on not getting what I want. I'm worshiping something else. Then over here, right, Paul even says it, idolatry. Covetousness is idolatry. You're worshiping something that you shouldn't worship. And it takes root and it takes over. He's mentioning these two lists for a specific reason. Why? Well, I think number one, I think it's in, these lists are intensely personal. Okay? What are we talking about? We're talking about starting a new life. We're talking about building a new Christian life off of Jesus Christ. And Paul wants to get very personal with us. And he wants to say, there's things that are hanging out in your life that are very personal. You can actually leave them in the walls. You can put up new drywall and nobody will ever know. Anger, it can seethe underneath, can't it? In your house, you can talk bad of people however you want and nobody may ever know, right? You can be with your phone in your pocket, right? You can be looking at all sorts of stuff, right? Wanting and coveting things that you shouldn't have, and it can turn into evil passions and desire and all of those things, and nobody will ever know. Very personal, right? We all have this, don't we? But then, it's not just intensely personal, but I think they are all intensely relational, right? This anger and everything, somebody's harmed me, it's affecting that relationship, isn't it? Eventually, if you take it to its end, that bitterness and that anger, what will it eventually do? It's going to destroy what? Even if you're hiding it, you're still destroying relationships, aren't you? Even if it hasn't bubbled over yet, you're still destroying relationships, aren't we? Over here, if we're giving, just wanting more and more and more, eventually at its end, sexual immorality is very relational, isn't it? You can destroy whole families with that, correct? Jesus said, well, Paul says, this is bad stuff. If we don't root this kind of stuff out, it's going to destroy us. It's going to destroy us. James says, the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. Proverbs 14 says, envy makes the bones rot. Hebrews chapter 12 says, warning that bitterness will defile many. Immorality and impurity will lead to rejection and lost opportunity to repent. Can we all agree that these are bad? I think we can. They destroy, don't they? Hope the kids are listening, because when I was, when we lived in Ohio, we had a house that had an acre property, and we had big, giant trees on this property. So when the fall season came, guess what happened? There was a lot of falling going on in our yard, and a lot of picking up of leaves and raking and all of that stuff, right? Now, the first few years, well, the first year I tried to work really hard on it, and, you know, and I had the tarps and all of the things and doing all that stuff, right? Second year, I was a little lazy, okay? And our house, because there's all these trees around, what would happen was all the leaves would fall and land in the gutters, okay? And if you're not on top of it, right, snow comes in Toledo, Ohio. Snow would come quickly after all of that fell, and then you'd have ice and dirt and leaves and all of that stuff stuck, right? And it happened more than once where the front door with the gutter across, right, giant icicles and everything, because I had not cleaned out the gutters, right? And we all know that's, I'm an idiot, right, because I didn't do that. It's going to destroy my house and my gutters, all of that, but I didn't do it, okay? So then when spring comes, when it finally thaws, okay, I was like, I probably should do something about that, right? But it's then been many months since that has happened, correct? And so I go out there, and what I would do, I grab my blower, right? Because I'm like, you can just blow the leaves out of the gutter. So I get up there, I'm on the roof, and I'm walking along the gutter, and I start to blow, and what do you think happens? Nothing. It's stuck, right? It is all solidified and rotten and all of that, right? And so I get a bright idea. I have a pressure washer. So I turn on the pressure washer. I get up on the roof. I got it long enough, and I start walking. I turn it on, you know? And guess what happens? It all came out. It all came out. But you know what else happened? It didn't go exactly where I wanted it to go. Okay, exploded all over me. I mean, every inch of my body was covered in this black, gross, nasty stuff. And if you've ever cleaned out gutters after the winter, there's a very distinct odor, okay? It's just rotten, right? It's just totally rotten. So it just went all over me, and I'm like, oh, what is that smell? And I was just like, oh, and then what do you do at that point? Well, might as well just finish the job. So I went around and I went the whole, I mean, we had a over 2,000 square foot house. And so there was a lot of gutters to do. And I did all, and guess what? When all said was done, I had to get down. I had to pick up all the junk that I had blown onto the grass and everything. By the end, if you've ever done pressure washing, by the end of that 45 minutes to an hour that it took me, I was completely soaked, right? Completely soaked. I smelled, well, you can imagine what I smelled like, and I was just caked in this nastiness, right? It was awful. So what's the next thing? Well, I gotta get a shower. This is gross, right? Somehow, without my wife paying attention, I sneak into the house and get to the shower. And you know, you get in the shower after something like that. You've all been there. You you're peeling this stuff off, right? The clothes. And it's even worse as you like get it over your head and all. You've been there, right? And then you get it all off and you throw it down and you hop in the shower and it's just like hot and warm and it's like, oh, this is heaven, this is wonderful, this is all great, right? Then you get all clean, you step out of the shower, and just imagine I go over to my clothes that are sitting in a pile over there, and I'm like, I don't have anything to wear, so I pick that up and I start to put it back on. I want you to just imagine what that would feel like first, okay? I stick the arm up through the sleeve, you know, and like sliding it on, and like, you know, you're probably shivering right now thinking of it, and you just slide, and it's really hard to get on, you know, and it's like it won't slide down your body, right? And I'm like, oh, this is great, just makes sense, let's do that. What's wrong with that? Do you know that's really what Paul's talking about right here? He says, you have been saved. I have removed the sin nature that is from you. I have given you a new life. And he uses the phrase, put off, which is the idea of taking off clothes and throwing them away. Getting rid of the things that are on your, put it off, get rid of it. And then he says, why in the world would you go back to that pile of dirty, rotten clothes and put it back on? Doesn't make sense. You're clean. But that's what we're doing with this sin. We are going back to what he saved us from. It doesn't make sense. We have to put on the new self. Look what it says. He says, don't lie to one another, seeing that you have put off or thrown the clothes off of the old self with its practices. But then he says, put on the new self, which is being renewed in knowledge, after the image of its creator. He says, Christ has given you a new life. He has given you himself. He wants to build you now into this new creation that honors God. He wants to restore the image of God in your life. He wants you to start living like you've been changed. And he says, what am I going to do? He says, you are being renewed in the knowledge after the image of its creator. The knowledge of God, everything that I've given you, that's going to renew and change, but we got to get rid of the old. Then he says, there is not Greek or and Jew, circumcised and uncircumcised, barbarian, Scythian, slave, free. He says, here there is not this. Where is he talking about? He's talking to the Colossian believers. He's talking to the church. He's talking to a bunch of people that have been changed by Jesus Christ. And then he says, really, that there is no race or religion or all of the things that you can think about that would separate us. Guess what? There's none of that anymore because we're all one in Jesus Christ. Why? Look what it says. But Christ is all and in all. Jesus Christ, because we've put our faith and trust in him, and because of the work on the cross, he gives himself to us. That's the whole restoration process. That's what Paul says in Colossians is the secret. Christ is in you. He's given you himself, and you are, Christ is all. You are complete now. You don't need to go back to the old stuff. You don't need to go back to the old ways. You have Jesus Christ that is living within you, right? He says, we're working towards something. We're trying to build something. He mentions in Colossians as well that Christ is the head of the church. So when he talks to these Colossian believers, he's saying, you are the church. He's saying, we're no longer making distinctions. We're all one in Jesus Christ. I need us to work together. I need us to come together as a church. I need us to all work to remove sin, get rid of the stinking rotten stuff that's there, clean out the closet, scrub the tub, do all the things, right? So that we can together become like Jesus Christ. So that we can build his church. And what he is really saying, personally, as the people of God, we have to do some work individually to root out sin in our life so that together we're rooting out sin in the church, so that as we build the church and we build our life for Christ, it's not going to come crumbling and crashing down at the end. Is that a great thing? Should we all be striving to build that in our church? I believe we should. We can't allow sin to erode and tear us down. We have to root it out. So the question is, like, how do we do that? How do we do that? Well, number one, I would say, you should probably identify and recognize the sin that might be festering in the walls, right? What's the stuff that's behind the drywall that you need to clean out, right? What's the thing that maybe you didn't let go of at the beginning when Jesus changed you? What's that habit that's kind of lingering and sticking around? You got to identify it, recognize it, point it out, and say, I see that. You may have to ask the Holy Spirit, Lord, I don't know what's in my life. Show me. And you know what will happen? He's done it for me. He'll point it out, right? If you have a spouse, you could just say, hey, honey, what do I need to get rid of? I'm pretty sure they'll be honest with you. I've got a list, right? No. No, ask somebody close to you. Identify what you need to get rid of. Number two, I would say, take it to the Lord. As soon as you identify the problem that needs to be rooted out, these things that are growing deep, identify it, then take it to the Lord. Confess it before Him. Say, I recognize it as wrong. Say, I need your help to remove it. This habit, it's taking control. Lord, give me strength. You say that I have you in me. Help me to do this. You've given us victory over all of this stuff. Help me to do it, because it looks really hard to me right now. I don't know that I can handle it. And then number three, I would do what Paul says. Put it to death. Fight. Go at it. Get rid of it. Obey. Do what is ever necessary to scour the house. Do what's ever necessary to get it out of the walls. Jesus put it this way. If your right eye offends you, we do what? Pluck it out, right? If your right hand offends you, what should you do? Cut it off, right? We talked about this thing before. This thing can fuel a lot of sin. I'm just going to be honest. We think that it's necessary. But let's say what Jesus really means, cut it out. What I would say is, like, if this is causing problems, get a flip phone. One that doesn't have the internet. It's possible, isn't it? You might think that's extreme, but I think that's the point. Jesus is saying, if you want to live for me, if you want to have a life that is honoring to the Lord, cut it out. Get rid of the things that are going to keep you from it. And here's what I'll tell you. Most of us, if not all of us, with this message, will need some help with it. I don't think we should do it on our own. I think that's why Paul is saying, hey, everybody, we're together in this. Let's work together on this to see this take place. You may have to open up your house a little bit, let people see what's in there so that they can help you recognize it and get rid of it. You can come and talk to us here at Calvary. We'd love to help you figure that out. Put a plan in place. Figure out how to eliminate the sin that is in your life. You know, as we finish this out, I just want to say this. Why? You may be thinking, like, this is hard. I don't know how to do this. Maybe you're afraid. Here's what I want to tell you. You can do this, okay? It's all, everybody in this room needs to do this, but you can do this, okay? Are you with me? You can do this. Why do I say that? Because Jesus is what Paul said. Jesus has set you free, and Jesus, the God of the universe, creator of all things, is in you. Do you need any more power or help if Jesus is in you? No, you can do it. He's given you all the resources that you need to be able to accomplish it. So the whole, I can't, this is impossible, That can't be an option for you, because wait, if it's true what Jesus says, that he's within me, I have his power at my resource, I can do it, right? I can do it. It's not too hard for God. I would say you can do it, but I also say your church needs you to do it. Your church needs you to fight. Why? Listen up. We just, in the last couple months, we embarked this church. We've made a choice to try and work together to turn this church around and get healthy. Didn't we? Are you with me? You know what I'm talking about? We voted end of August to turn things around. I believe what Paul is saying to us this morning is that in order to turn a church around, you have to turn yourself around. Okay? It starts personal. It starts in the walls of our own home, and we got to root out sin. And if we are healthy, then what can we do for the church? We can make the church healthy. Your church needs you to fight. If we're going to impact Blue Springs for the gospel, if we're going to get excited about telling people about Jesus, we have to get excited about getting rid of sin in our life and being healthy. Can you imagine what it feels like to get healthy yourself and get rid of these sinful habits that are plaguing your life? I hope that's exciting to you, the freedom that that is. Jesus has already knocked a huge blow to your sinful nature, has removed it, and he's like, you can do it now. I've got everything, given you everything you need to say no and get it all out. And guess what you'll do for the church? It's going to change your church as each one of us work to get healthy ourselves. And finally, I will tell you this. Jesus wants you to fight. Jesus wants you to fight it. How do I know that? Well, I've already said it. Christ is all and in all, right? Christ is complete. He is God of the universe that has lived a perfect life, coming to live inside of you. Everything you need, you are complete in Jesus, and he's filled you, and he says, I did this because I want you to fight. I want you to fight for the gospel. I want you to fight for your family. I want you to fight for your church. I want you to fight for what is right. I want you to glorify God in our community so that we can see more people come to know Jesus as their Savior. You can do this. You can fight with your church. Christ is behind you to the glory of God, right? Let's pray.